Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Questions from the Audio Road. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford, and I'll be taking your calls and answering your questions for the next hour or so. Lisa is here with us, screening calls and keeping things light and fun. If you want to join in, simply press 1 on your phone, and Lisa will be right with you. This is the show that puts the money where it belongs, back in your pocket. Sit back, relax, and listen, or jump in and ask your question. You can even bring us your opinion. It's up to you. This is your show. You can ask questions about fuel mileage, tires, engine, EGR, aerodynamics, truck specking, maintenance, taxes, financial planning, getting started as an owner-operator, or anything else about the business of trucking. Here we go. Let's head on down the audio road.
Hi, this is Lisa. Remember to talk to Kevin. Press 1 so I can pick up the phone and screen your calls. You know you'd rather talk to me anyway. Or just sit back, relax, and listen to the show. And at any time you have a question, just hit 1 and I'll pick up the phone.
Welcome to Questions from the Audio Road. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford. Lisa's here screening your calls. The lines are filling up quick, so if you're listening online, you might want to dial us up now and get in. The number to call, 347-884-8327. Once you're on that call, press 1, and we'll start getting to your questions. Lisa will screen your call, and we'll line those up. You know, we're always playing around with technology here and trying new things. I'm going to do something a little different here tonight. We're actually going to record this as our extra hour for the week, just playing around with some formatting stuff. So if you're used to the podcast, it's going to seem a little different. If you're new to the podcast, well, you won't know any difference anyway. So we are going to record this as though it is our extra hour on the live show on SiriusXM the way we do sometimes after the show. So the format may seem a little different if you're used to the straight podcast, but we still have plenty of time to get to a lot of calls. So if you've got a question, a comment, a topic, whatever it might be, press 1 on your phone. I see a lot of hands going up already. So we're going to jump right in and get started on this. Good evening and welcome to the show. I'm Kevin Rutherford and this is the show that puts the money where it belongs, back in your pocket. I'm here tonight and every night to improve your bottom line and make you more successful. We talk about the things that are important to you, your business, your money, your life, and your success. Thanks for joining me, allowing me to ride along with you for an hour tonight. I consider it my mission on this show to bring you the very latest information to help you be more successful, make more money, save more money, and avoid scams and ripoffs. We can talk about trucks, money, retirement accounts, fuel mileage, maintenance, health insurance, technology, taxes, financial planning, current events, politics, or anything else you'd like to bring to the show. We're going to jump right in and get to some phone calls tonight. Let's start off in Illinois. Greg, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Kevin, for taking my call.
You're welcome. What's on your mind tonight?
Well, real quick, before I get to my main issue, I wanted to tell you, I downloaded Atlas Shrugged off of Audible.com, and
okay,
for 15, that's the best $15 I've spent in a long time, buddy. That, I've actually missed a couple hours of your program over the last week because I've been listening to that audio book,
uh-huh,
and it is just, it's amazing. I'm stunned. It really is something.
You know, it's The book was written in the 50s, and when you think about it in context of what's going on today, it's almost scary.
It's terrifying. It really is. Anyway, very prophetic. I talked to you here a couple weeks ago about my truck. I just picked it up Wednesday. It was a week ago. from the shop, just had an in-frame done. We've been chasing a problem with having to add water consistently to my radiator and all. I don't know
right.
if you remember, but...
yeah, I do.
When I picked it up from the shop, I normally run the Rotella full synthetic, but they didn't have that available there at the shop, so I just had them put regular Rotella in it, and I figured
okay.
I would just do my makeup oil like I do with my OPS, you know, just
right.
1 gallon at a time, change it over. But
right.
my question tonight, I guess, is more just recommended that, you know, once I get 10,000, 12,000 miles on the truck, probably just go ahead and at least do one oil change anyway. Would I still need to do that? Would you recommend that as well as far as the break-in?
You mean doing a full oil change after a break-in?
Right.
Now, it's not necessary. You know, you are going to see high wear metals. You're going to see some numbers that are different just because it is an in-frame. But the lab knows how to make up for that. When they look at the sample, they use a different criteria, different set of guidelines as far as what is normal and abnormal, because there are things that they expect to show up in the oil after an in-frame. And you have the OPS on there, correct?
Yes, OPS 1.
Yeah. The OPS will keep the oil clean, so it's not necessary to do an oil change. You could just do exactly what you were planning on. As you do your makeup oil, put in synthetic and run this oil out until, you know, the sample tells you to change it.
Okay, and when I fill out the paperwork on the sample, when I send it in, I made a notation down in the comments, you know, because I wasn't real sure exactly what I should put as far as the number of hours or miles on the unit versus on the oil. Because, I mean,
miles,
the unit.
Okay. And the notes are great, because any time you put notes in there, that's good information. They'll figure it out. But your unit time really started at zero again.
Okay. All right.
So when you take
yeah.
that first sample, and let's say you've got 15,000 and whatever miles on it when you take the first sample, it will be 15,000 miles on the unit and 15,000 miles on the oil.
I got you. Okay. Yeah, well, I probably confused them then, because I've already pulled one sample and just as a kind of a baseline, and it only had like 200 miles on the oil. But, you know, I notated that, you know, the tractor has 875,000 miles on it, but that it was just in-frame 200 miles ago, and the oil only has 200 miles on it, as well as the in-frame only has 200
yeah,
miles
see,
on it.
That won't confuse them at all. That was a perfect note. That'll
okay.
let them know what they're looking at. That's easy to understand, so they'll get it right. The other thing you will want to make a note of is when you started with mineral oil and now you're going to do makeup in synthetic, just make a note of that. Make a note
yeah,
that your makeup
yeah.
oil is Rotella synthetic, and then they'll know to be watching out for the differences.
Right. Okay. Well, that's all I had. So far,
right.
so good. I'm seeing about 7.5 to 8 miles to the gallon right now on this truck. And I appreciate all you've done, because I started when I bought this truck a year and a half, 2 years ago, I was only getting about 5.5 or 6 out of it. So,
wow. Wow.
Thank
that's
you,
fantastic.
Kevin.
You're welcome. And
I'm glad
you're enjoying the book as well. All right, I'm going to get to another call. Let's go to Charles in Maryland. Welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin. Thanks for taking my call. I'm running recaps on my rear drive tires, and I need a new tire. And I was wondering, what is the disadvantage of should I buy two new tires to go on the axle, or should I buy a new one to run with a lower tire? What's the disadvantages of doing that?
you're going to run into some real problems when you've got mismatched tires in the same position, in the dual position next to each other. You're actually, the smaller tire is going to wear really funny. What happens is the smaller tire is going to try to turn, it's actually going to have to turn more times than the bigger tire, and it's going to really wear that tire out bad. So I don't recommend putting tires in next to each other with a big size differential like that.
Okay, so you're saying if I'm going to change one, I should just change both.
Right. Yeah.
Okay.
Or you've got to try to match that tire size. Like if you'd rather wait, you know, if you're going to be putting on drive tires sometime and you don't want to buy two new now and then, you know, be mismatched again in a little while, what you can do is go to a tire shop that, you know, almost everybody's got used tires around somewhere and just have them match that size. You know, have them pull that tire off and have them match that size as close as possible.
Okay. Does it have to be a lug style? It's a lug style tire. Does it have to be a lug style, or can it be matched with an all position?
It can be matched with an all position. That won't hurt anything as long as they're really close in total size.
Okay. I got one more question. You were saying something about as far as saving money is concerned. You were saying that if you save, I think you said $500 a month over the next 20 years, I don't know what percentage rate you were using, you know, what annual percentage rate your gains would be, but can you give me like a rough idea? If I saved the $500 for 20 years, what would my percentage rate have to be in order for me to come up with $1 million?
I don't have my calculator right up front of me, so I'll give you a couple that I can kind of calculate off the top of my head. When I do retirement planning numbers like that, retirement calculations, and I'm talking about how much we could possibly save, the number that we use is a number of growth. Because when we invest for retirement, we don't really earn interest. We get growth in our mutual funds, and the rate of growth is 10% annually. Now, some people go, oh, well, you know, where are you going to get 10% year after year? Well, we don't get it every year. In fact, there are some years where you could actually lose money in retirement accounts and in mutual funds. But if you take the three retirement accounts, the three mutual funds that you hear me talk about all the time, if we look at any 10-year period, if we go back in time and look at any 10-year period, those funds in a 10-year period have always returned 10% or more. In fact, there are some 10-year periods where they have done almost 14% annual growth over that 10-year period. Now, if we look at individual years, there are some years they had big losses. So this is long-term, but I use 10%. And if we can save $400 a month at 10% rate of growth for 30 years, we get to $1 million. So if you've only got 20 years, it takes considerably more per month. And I'm going to guess that it's going to have to be in the 650, probably about $600 to $650 a month range to do it 20 years. May even be a little more.
Okay. If you have time, what are the name of the three mutual funds that you talk about?
It is an S&P 500 index fund,
mm-hmm.
A small cap index fund.
Small cap, okay.
And an EFA index fund, European and Asian index fund. Those are the three that I kind of put together for retirement savings. And if we look, those are real common index funds. Every mutual fund company has those three. So it doesn't matter whether you go to Vanguard or T. Rowe Price or whoever, they'll have those three index funds. And historically, they've always done those kind of returns in a 10-year period.
Okay. Thanks a lot, man. You have a good day.
You're welcome. Thanks for calling and thanks for listening. We're going to jump right back into another segment here, so let's get right back to it. Good evening. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. This is Trucking Business and Beyond. We're going to get right back to some phone calls. Let's go to Georgia this time. Rico, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin. How you doing?
Doing good. What's on your mind tonight?
I want to ask you a question. I know you always talk about the trucks and everything, but if a fellow's looking to buy a trailer, and I know you talk about we can control, a lot of times we can control the rolling resistance and get better gas mileage if we had control of the trailer.
Right.
What are your suggestions in looking for a trailer? What should I be looking for? What should I be trying to find out, you know, on the used market? And as far as tires are concerned, what should I be trying? If it comes with just the regular steel bud size, what should I be trying to look to swap those out to when I'm initially purchasing that?
Good question. You know, a lot of the same strategies that I teach on the DVD about truck buying will transfer over to the trailer. We still want to, you know, look hard at the trailer as far as inspecting it. It's much easier. You know, there are far fewer mechanical systems on a trailer that we need to worry about. We'd like to. Are we just talking about a dry van or what kind of trailer?
Yeah, I'm looking at a dry van, trying to find me some dry vans. I'm seeing some pretty cheap prices out here right now. I've seen some air rides as low as $2,000, but at the same time, I don't know if I need to be looking for, like, the Dura-plated kind or the kind with the wooden sides. I'm just not sure.
Yeah, and that's a good question, and a lot of this comes from, you know, try to think over the years the different trailers you've pulled around and features that you liked or didn't like. You know, the interior paneling on the walls, what has held up better, those kind of things. But mechanically, you know, there are only so many systems on the trailer. We'd like to make sure that the wiring is sound. You know, do a good inspection on wiring, make sure everything's good there. The great thing about a trailer is, for the most part, especially with a dry van, it's pretty simple, and if we do have to replace things, the cost isn't, you know, it's not outrageous. We're not going to get ourselves in a lot of trouble buying a trailer that may need some things replaced, brakes, that kind of thing. So we're looking for a bargain. We want a trailer that's in reasonably good condition, just and that's, you know, the obvious stuff when we inspect it. And then what we could start to do, and this kind of goes along with some of the things I teach on the DVD, is the things that could be altered on the trailer, we want to use those things as part of our negotiation process. And this kind of leads into that idea of win-win negotiating that we talk about. Let's say that we find the trailer and we've agreed on a price. And I'm just going to use a number. Let's say we've agreed on a price of $10,000 for this trailer. The dealer's happy with the price and I'm happy with the price. That doesn't mean the negotiations are over, because there are things the dealer can do, and he can do them cheaper than we could do them, and we make this part of the negotiation. This is how we get to the win-win. Let's say that the dealer can buy tires at cost and we can't. So now it doesn't cost, let's just say that the tires we're looking at, we want to switch to all wide single low rolling resistance tires. And if we go out and buy them, they're going to cost us $4,000 for us to do it on the market, but the dealer could get it done at $3,000. Well, it doesn't cost the dealer anything to do that other than the $3,000. And it's cheaper than it is for us. It would cost us $4,000. This is a win-win negotiation. So now instead of paying $10 for the trailer, which we would have been happy before, now we negotiate, we'll pay $13 for the trailer if the dealer puts on the tires that we want. So now instead of us paying $10 for a trailer, which we would have been happy with, and $4,000 more for the tires, we pay $13,000 total. We get the trailer we want with the tires we want. The dealer sells the trailer at a price they were happy with. You see how everybody wins there?
Gotcha. I got you. Row the boat in the direction that is already going.
Yeah, exactly. And everybody wins. Nobody has to lose in that negotiation. We saved $1,000, but it didn't cost the dealer $1,000 to do it. It didn't cost him anything, and we saved $1,000. Everybody wins. Everybody's happy. So those are the kind of things we look for in negotiation. Same thing, like, you know, we can expand that out to any part of this process. Let's say that the trailer that we're looking at, again, we come to an agreement, we're happy with the price, but you know what? It really needs brakes. Well, again, can the dealer get that done at cost? Does the dealer have access to a shop somewhere where it will cost them much less to do brakes than it would cost us? So let's negotiate that in again. You know, let's do the brakes, but let's do them at the dealer cost instead of us taking the trailer at a price we're happy with, and then we have to go add on. Let's try to get all of this stuff negotiated into the deal.
One-stop shopping.
Yep.
I got you. Thanks so much, Kevin. I just ordered the DVD, as a matter of fact, so I'm looking forward to getting that.
Well, and as you're watching it, those are the kind of things I teach on there. And there are some other things, too, as far as how to get that very best price from the dealer. You know, that's step one. Let's get to that best price. Then let's start looking at some of these add-ons and these other things. So as you're watching that DVD and you see those strategies, even though it's, you know, specific about how we do it with a tractor, just think about it for the trailer. It all works the same way.
Okie doke. Well, I appreciate it. Thanks so much for what you guys do for us.
You're welcome. Thanks for the call. Let's see. Let's run off to New York. Ronald, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin. How you doing this evening?
Doing great. What's on your mind tonight?
I was calling to kind of weigh in. You were looking for some anti-idling technologies or something that that you could go to other than an APU. And
right.
I was gonna tell you this, and this also may work too for your RV, because to get rid of that propane generator. But there's a website. It's called AuroraGenerators.com, and it's Aurora like Aurora, Colorado.
Okay.
Yeah, AuroraGenerators.com, and they have diesel generators, diesel portable generators, as well as gas-powered generators. And one of their diesel ones is it's $999. Diesel generator, open frame, and it includes a remote control to start it and glow plug.
Wow.
And all that stuff. Yeah, it's a really good price.
What size is it? Do you remember?
That one is, I believe, I want to say 4,000 watts.
Wow.
Or 4,500,
okay.
Somewhere around in there, 4,000 or 4,500. Then if you wanted to step up to a closed frame silent one, they've got a 6,500 watt silent diesel generator for $1,599 with a remote control also.
That sounds outrageously cheap. I mean, ridiculously cheap, and I'm wondering why.
Well, they say they're the manufacturer, but I'm imagining that they're probably from China. But I've looked at the silent generator. Matter of fact, I bought a silent generator at an auction 2 weeks ago for $700. And that's the cheapest I had seen was that one for $15.99. So, and it was brand new. But there's a whole bunch of different ones, and they're all kind of around the same price, and they're around anywhere from $1,599 to $2,000 for that silent generator one. Now, the open frame diesel, is that one is the cheapest I've ever seen anywhere.
Yeah, that's even for the, you know, at $2,000, if we're talking about, you know, $6,500, $6,000, anywhere in that range, that is ridiculously cheap. I mean, I would almost be willing to try one at that price just to see how fast I could wear it out. Because I would have to believe, especially in the RV, when, and you know, we really don't use it a lot, because a lot of times we can plug in on shore power, but when we're on the road and we're spending a night somewhere, just, you know, pulling over for 6 or 8 hours while we're on the road, we'll run the generator. When we do run them, we run it hard. You know, in the summertime, you've got two big air conditioners going, and we've got a ton of technology in there with the satellite and three different internet connections. And, you know, so when we do use it, we use it hard. I would almost be willing to try one just to see how fast I could wear it out. Interesting stuff. In fact, hold on. I want to talk to you a little bit more about that right after the break. So I'm going to put you on hold, and I'm going to come back to you here in just a minute. We'll be right back. Stick around. You're on the Road Dog, Sirius 147, XM 171. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Hey, I just want to let everybody know we're going to jump into the next segment here for the recording in just a minute. But lines are, we don't have many lines open, just a few. If you're listening online and you want to join us, 347-884-8327. But we do have some room for questions still. So if you're on the call with us and you've got a question, a comment, a topic, we are going to have some time for those, so press 1 on your phone, and Lisa will screen your call. You'll talk to her first, and then I'll try to get to as many as I can before we wrap this up tonight. But it looks like we've got some room for some more. I know I've got a couple to get to yet. Jump in and join us. Press 1 on your phone. All right, let's get right back to it. Good evening. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. This is Trucking Business and Beyond. Before the break, I was talking with Ronald in New York about some APUs, some diesel generators. Ronald, are you still with me?
I'm still here.
Okay. That was auroragenerators.com. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay. I'm going to go check that out. That's interesting. Again, you know, most of the time, when you look at pricing, I mean, you always have to be careful. You get what you pay for. But sometimes it makes sense to pay less. I mean, even if we know we're going to wear it out, it's not going to last as long, sometimes it still makes sense to do that. Other times it's just the opposite. We want to buy the best we can get. But it's interesting to have an alternative like that, and I'm going to go check those out. It may be a really good alternative for somebody who doesn't use it a lot, wants it as a backup, or would rather, you know, the open frame at a price like that, if you threw it on there and you wore it out in, you know, a year, so what?
Right. That's exactly what I was thinking. and it's the weight on the open frame is about 212 pounds, and the silent one is probably about 360 pounds. So there's a pretty good weight difference between the two.
Right.
The guy at Aurora, I talked to him, and he said, you know, he would recommend going with the cheaper generator just for the sheer weight savings on it. And then I was going to tell you, too, Dometic, D-O-M-E-T-I-C, they do a lot of stuff with RVs, and they have I guess you call them heat pumps. They'll do AC and heat that they use, and they've got some systems that have just a single system. Some of them have a two part system where part of it's outside of the cab on a truck, and part of it's inside. And then they have the self contained one unit, and those I think they're running somewhere around $600 or something like that. And you could have heat and AC inside,
yeah.
And with the generator, you're talking, you know, less than $2,000.
Yeah, actually, Dometic, now I'm very familiar with all the work we've been doing on the RV, because just about everything in the RV, the refrigerator, AC, all of that stuff is made by Dometic. And I just bought one of those AC units with the heat pump on it. We've got two of them in tandem. They actually work together, but you can run them separately, and the unit is up top, and then we've got part of the inside. And I think we have a lot of space to cool, 36 feet. So we've got two units, and I think the unit that we just bought was $800. Was the cost on that, and it'll cool. I mean, it would take a sleeper down to, you know, icicle temperature.
Right. Yeah. The one that I was thinking of, there's one called a Cool Cat, and I found it at an RV dealer out in Oregon, but I'm having trouble finding it on the internet. And that particular one it's a smaller unit, and they said they could mount one underneath of my bunk. And it doesn't need it. It would have, I think, on the bottom of it, out the bottom of the sleeper somehow would have to be vented to either bring in air or something. But other than that, you know, it's small enough to fit inside. You don't have to. You wouldn't need a rooftop access, which I couldn't use anyway because I've got a condo.
Yeah, you know, we've been talking about this whole APU thing and heating and cooling in trucks for several years now, and now that I'm learning more on the RV side, I'm wondering why a lot of this RV technology hasn't been adapted on the trucking side. I mean, in a lot of ways, a lot of the things that I'm seeing now that's available on the RV side, I'm just wondering why they haven't really caught on the trucking side. Because, you know, when we look at what we spend for an APU, you know, $8,000 to $10,000, I mean, it's just outrageous. It just seems like, and this is part of what we're doing as we're talking about this and exploring it, is looking at a way to, you know, use some of these other products that are out there and put something together a whole lot cheaper and really good solutions. You know, it seems like on the APU side, it seems like we're always compromising something. We spend a lot of money on it, and then people tell me, well, it won't really keep up with the cooling when, you know, the temperature's over 95 degrees. Well, why not? If we spend all that money on it, I mean, we should be able to hang meat in there. You know, it should be able to keep it that cold. And everybody says, well, it does okay till we get over 95, and then it doesn't really do good. Or, you know, we're running a lot of 110 stuff in the cab, and it doesn't produce enough 110. And again, why not? I mean, we get all of that stuff on the RV side.
Yeah, and I'm just going to weigh in on one thing on that real quick, and then I'll let you get to somebody else. But I think it's a lot of it is as well. That's the way we've always done things. You know, if you go over to the general aviation industry, you know, they're still flying on 1940s technology, basically, even though you get a brand new plane. So it's probably real similar.
Thanks, Kevin. So thank you. I appreciate that. I'm already looking at that site. It looks pretty interesting. So I'm going to do some research on that and see what I come up with. I appreciate the heads up on that. Let's go to Illinois. Mike, welcome to the program.
How you doing, Kevin?
Doing good. What can I help you with tonight?
I got a question, if you could help me at all, for first-time truck buyer financing. I've talked to you a while ago about the older trucks, and I'm trying to get a truck financed, and it's like pulling teeth.
And I'm not surprised. We're in a whole new world when it comes to financing. What is the price range you're looking at as far as how much you're looking to spend on this?
Right about in the 40,000, $35,000 to $40,000 is what the 04 and 05s are going for.
Okay. Now, are you able to buy an 04? Are you leasing to a carrier that has an age requirement or not?
Now, 04 would be the last year he'll accept the tanker outfit.
Okay. That actually sounds a tad high. I mean, it seems to me like we should be able to find a reasonable 04. It doesn't have to be, you know, top of the line, but we should be able to find a good, sound 04 in the 30,000 or under range.
That I'm having a hard time. I'm being a little bit picky. I'm looking for a studio sleeper because I might tune this truck. It's got new brakes, new tires, new bearings oil pump in the motor, 18 speed, a couple of accidents I'm looking for, you know, with a little bigger of a truck. And I got good credit, I got down payment, and I don't know, I went through 4, 5, 6 places already, and they all turn you down.
How much do you have down right now? How much do you have in cash?
Between $7,000 and $10,000.
Okay, and even with $10,000 on a $35,000 purchase, you're still getting turned down?
Still getting turned down. And the last guy, I told him I'd give you $15,000 down because I really wanted this truck. It was a nice piece. I'll give you $15,000 down. Then they tell me, oh, the finance guy says since you ain't got 2 years provable owner-operator, because it's been 20 since I've had one before, we can't finance it. It's like one thing after another.
Yeah, see, that was going to be my next question, is if it's a matter of needing more cash down, then there's another option that you can look into. First time is always tough when they consider you a first-time buyer, especially in today's environment. But what you could do is look into what's called peer-to-peer lending. If you do a Google search, you can do peer-to-peer lending, and I don't have a lot of time to get into it right now, but do some reading, do some research on it. There's a ton of articles will come up and several sites where you can go do this, and you'll be able to borrow up to $25,000 using this method, and that financing could be separate from the rest of the truck financing, or if you've got 10 down of your own and we can borrow 25 on peer-to-peer, that may be the way that you solve this. So I want you to go do some research on it. And if you have questions, after you do the research, call me back and I'll answer your specific questions about it. But that may be a good option for you to use in this case. Stick around. We'll be right back. You're on the Road Dog, Sirius 147, XM 171. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Good evening. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. This is Trucking Business and Beyond. We're going to jump right back into the phone calls. Let's go this time to Greg in Pennsylvania. Welcome to the program.
Hey, thanks, Kevin. Big fan of your show.
Thank you.
Does a pre-emission Volvo motor, does that do pretty well on fuel?
Yeah, you know, they really don't. I was when the Volvo motor first became available over here, I was kind of interested in the technology, and I thought I almost bought one, and then I looked around and talked to a lot of people that had them. They just don't do as good as I would expect them to. Now, it's like everything else. We can always improve it, but it's one of the engines that we have a tougher time getting those really good fuel mileage numbers out of. And when I talk about really good, you know, we're talking about 8, you know, and now we're even pushing those numbers somewhat. But we don't see those kind of fuel mileage numbers out of them. Normally, if you take that engine, you put it in a Volvo tractor, a nice aerodynamic truck, good specs, and normally when I would expect them to get low 7s before we even start modifying them, they really are in the low to mid 6s before we start doing anything to them.
Yeah, I can cross that one off the list then.
Yeah.
Would you recommend all pre-emissions, the C12 Cat over an N14 or?
Yeah, actually I would. And you know, Cat, it's not my favorite engine, but I really like the C12. If I were going to own a Cat, it would be a C12.
Wow. And then if you have time, I do have one other question.
Sure, go ahead.
I have my own authority, and I was wondering, who determines, or do I determine, am I on the 60-hour rule or the 70-hour rule? Do I make up my own mind, or does
yeah.
Now, are the rules I need to follow?
No, you decide, and basically everybody uses the 70.
Okay. I appreciate it, Kevin.
You're welcome. Thanks for the call. Let's head off this time to Missouri. Ryan, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Kevin. Fairtax now.
Yeah, let's get it done.
I got a question on, I know your opinion of the Asian-made tires, but are 16-ply tires going to be a higher rolling resistance than a, you know, your Michelin XBA Energies?
We have to look at each individual tire. Is there a specific 16-ply you're looking at?
It's the Ling Long. It's made by Ling Long. It's called the Atlas AW09. I couldn't find it on the website there.
Yeah. Boy, I see it. The 16-ply really doesn't matter. It's the tire itself. And if it's not on the calculator, I have no way of knowing. I've looked all over the place for numbers anywhere else on rolling resistance, and I just can't find them.
Yeah, nobody puts them out there, and I'm curious because I've got access to a national account. I can get XDA Energies for like $340 each, which is, I mean, it's a stupid price. But
yeah,
these Ling Longs are like I can outfit all 8 for, and it's an all position tire. I can put all 8 on for $1,800. But
yeah, there's a reason for that, though.
Yeah,
you know that this kind of goes back to we get what we pay for, and part of the problem here is if we were only going to compare how long the tires would last. I mean, let's just do some numbers. What was the price on the XDA Energy? $340,
I think.
Let's call it $350. So okay. That's seven, that's what, 2,800? Does that sound right?
Yeah. Yeah, it's 2,800. Like 30 after mounting and whatnot.
Okay, let's call it 3,000 instead of 1,800. We're only saving $1,200.
Yeah.
And let's say that tire wear, let's say they're going to both wear exactly the same. We don't know that. My guess is the Michelins are going to last longer. But let's, since we don't know, let's just say that both of those tires will last 1 year, just to keep everything nice and simple.
Sure.
Now, the real game when it comes to tires isn't how long they're going to last or how much they cost. It's what are they going to do to our fuel economy. And all it would take, the Michelin only needs to get 0.1 mile per gallon better to make up the difference. And that's nothing.
Huh.
I mean, I know you're going to get 0.1. Now, if we get 0.2, the savings are big. If it's a 0.3, it's ridiculous. So, you know, 1800 is really cheap to put a new set of drive tires on, but in your case, 3000 or whatever it was going to be for a new set of tires with that low of a rolling resistance is a steal. You would be crazy not to buy them.
And I'm moving from the M726EL with the 141 rolling resistance. I should see quite a return on that, right?
Yeah, don't even consider the cheap Chinese tires this time. I mean, really ever. But in this case, don't even think about it. I guess the only time I would tell somebody, look, if that's what you've got to do, is that if a good set of tires is going to cost them $4,000 and they just don't have $4,000. They've got $1,800, and they need to keep the truck rolling down the road, then I'd say, by all means, go buy the cheap tire, do what you've got to do to keep running. But I don't think that's the case.
In this situation, I would be better off to, say, just buy 4 Michelins now, pay them off, and then buy 4 more Michelins rather than do all 8.
Yes, absolutely. Okay. Yeah, I would much rather see you do it that way. You're going to be much farther ahead. I'm going to squeeze in one more call before we've got to get out of here. Let's go to Luke in North Carolina. Welcome to the program.
Well, thank you, sir. I've listened to the XM program many times, but this is the first time I've listened to the phone type program.
Got it. Welcome to the show.
Well, thank you. I'm actually my brother and I have owned a truck. Actually, he owned the truck, and I drove with him. But I'm trying to get into owner operator on my own, and it's been a really hard row. I've had a terrible time trying to get financing for one thing. I took a bit of a hard knock back here when we had the big real estate mess up. And I guess what I'm calling to ask about is, is there any kind of special, different type of financing that I can look into? Is it smart to try and do a small business loan or something like that in order to get started out?
You can try. With some of the financing programs that are going on as part of the whole stimulus thing, you may be able to get something, although it seems to me like most of those just kind of, those programs fell through. So, you know, the government made all this money available, and we won't even get into that whole issue. But even though they made it available, the banks weren't lending it. And, you know, it seems like I read 10 different reasons why. The banks, you know, couldn't figure out all the paperwork, how it was all going to work. The rules weren't clear, but none of those programs that, as part of the stimulus, really seemed to take off. Now, it doesn't mean you shouldn't go out and try finding them. I mean, if you can, you know, first of all, what you need to do is find a bank that is an SBA lender, a Small Business Administration lender, and talk to them about the possibility and see if they do have something available. The other option that I talked to earlier tonight with another caller is do some research on peer-to-peer lending, P-E-E-R, peer-to-peer lending. And that's a way to raise up to $25,000 is usually the limit on that. And again, if I had more time, I would go into exactly how it works and what it is. But if you do a Google search online for peer-to-peer lending, not only will you find, you know, 5 to 10 websites that handle that whole process, you'll also find articles that you can read what peer-to-peer lending is, how it works. And if you go read those and then you've got specific questions about it, call me back and I can answer your specific questions. And we can go from there. But tonight I'm all out of time. Stick around. Jonesy's coming up next with the all-night truck stop. You're on the Road Dog, Sirius 147, XM 171. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Good night, everyone. All right, thanks, everyone. We're working on a new format. We do have some time left here, though, that I'm going to grab a couple more calls. So if you're still on here and you've got a question, I'll try to finish up. Let's go to Rick in Tennessee. Rick, welcome to the program.
Good night, Mr. Rutherford. Thank you, Ms. Lisa. Hey, how you doing, Kevin?
Good. What's on your mind tonight?
Hey, real quick, I got this situation maybe you can help me with. I got some money I'm trying to, I guess it's burning a hole in my pocket. I don't have a retirement fund. Got another year and a half left to pay my truck off, but somehow I ended up with $10,000 I'm trying to figure out what to do with. And I was looking at, like, putting maybe half of it into a credit union. And I called T. Rowe Price and spoke to them about some IRAs and stuff like that.
Okay.
I just wanted to hear your advice of how would you kind of like sprinkle it out. And like I said, I don't have any retirement fund or anything like that.
Got it. Okay. What about debt? Other than the truck, let's set that aside. What kind of debt do you have?
I don't owe nobody nothing but besides this truck I'm driving.
Wow. That's fantastic. Congratulations. All right, so debt is taken care of. Then the next step that we'd like to see when we've got some cash and before we really even get into retirement planning is an emergency fund. What we like to see for an emergency fund is if your income stopped tomorrow for whatever reason, sickness, injury, unemployment for any number of reasons, if you stopped receiving all of your income, how much would it cost you to survive per month? I mean, what are your living expenses for a month? Do you have a rough idea?
I estimate that to be somewhere around, you're talking business and home or just home?
No. Now, all we're talking about is let's say that for whatever reason you couldn't work. If you can't work, we really don't have any business expenses left. Now, you would have to continue making the truck payment, so you could figure that in. But then at home, what would it take you to survive? And we're talking about bare minimum just getting by. You know, we can cut out – if we end up in a situation where we need our emergency fund, then we're going to cut out all extras. You know, for this period of time where, you know, entertainment, eating out, all that stuff goes away. So when we're calculating our emergency fund, we look at it as what do we need to survive the month?
I figure with my truck payment in, I figure around $3,500.
Okay. And how many sources of income do you have? Is it just the business? Is that the income that comes in every month?
Yes, sir.
Okay. So if we only have one source of income, we would really like to see an emergency fund that is a minimum of 4 months. And some people who are a little more conservative and like to have more protection, 6 months, but no more than 6 months. So either 4 or 5 or 6, somewhere in there, whatever you're comfortable with. So that would really wipe out that $10,000, and you would actually want to start putting a little more into it. But I would feel pretty good if you had the $10,000 for now. So I would continue along the lines that you were looking. A credit union is just fine. Any type of cash account. In today's world, nobody is paying anything as far as interest goes on accounts like this. We're in the 1 and 2% range, so it's really not worth, you know, really shopping for. You could look around for a money market account, but a credit union would be just fine. And literally, you just put the money in there. We don't put it at any kind of risk. We don't invest it in anything that could lose any money. We just really, it's not going to gain much, but we want it sitting there for an emergency. But
okay,
you've got two huge parts of a good financial plan taken care of. Your debt's gone. Now you've got the emergency fund. Now, after that, you would start looking at putting some money into retirement account every month.
Okay, okay. Two things before you let me go real quick, Kevin. Putting this thing in, do you suggest putting the whole thing in? I don't want to walk in a credit union with $10,000. Or you suggest putting half in and keeping half in cash?
Nope. No, put it all in. Just go open the account, put all of it in there, and it, in one swoop, you just wiped out something that takes some people 2 and 3 years to accumulate. You're done. Your emergency fund is sitting there. Gives you a great peace of mind. If your income stops, you've got several months worth of living expenses just sitting there waiting for you. They're not at any risk. We don't have to worry about the market going up and down. And now that that's taken care of, you can start focusing on retirement savings.
Okay, I appreciate that. The next one was a comment for you real quick. As far as what you were trying to politics on Thursday on the conference call, you might want to try something financial. I mean, you helping us guys out here save a lot of money as far as fuel mileage and everything. We really need some education as far as how to handle it and where to put it and what to do with it. So if you could find a way to squeeze that in there to do some kind of a financial questions or something like that, I think that'll really help a lot, and I really appreciate it, and you guys have a good night.
That's a good idea. Thanks. I appreciate the idea, and we are all out of time this time, so thanks everybody for joining me. Remember, we do this every Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday night, 10:30 p.m. Eastern Time. Live show's coming up in 30 minutes on Sirius XM. We'll see you then. Be safe, be profitable, be responsible, and master the journey. Good night, everyone. I'm Kevin Rutherford.